Okay, conceptual again for PUL. I'm looking at actually Harry Potter again, I'm on the second movie now, and by the end of the first one, I kind of thought, they are. I understand why some say that her writing is pedestrian, because they are cliches there. I don't remember if they put it in the film or if it was there in the books. You know, that computer game-ish. You know, going from room to room, and there you are, and there's a chess game, which looks like it was taken from Tomb Raider or something. You know, these kind of gimmicks. Okay, and then there's some thrilling action there when they're playing that game. It's kind of, cliche. And I see in this one too. And, you know, okay, there is this car ride there, crazy, in front of the train and under the bridge, and it all goes wild, and there is this. Then this interesting character or characters of those angry trees, or that angry tree. I guess, or am I wrong, that at least it's effective to put a little bit of that kind of, what shall we call it? It's not slap comment, it's not, there's a word for it anyway. Just these sequences that are maybe comical too. And, well, the cliffhangers and this and that, which I want to avoid. And I don't like those. I don't like cliches and little gimmicks that you pick out of the Hollywood book. But definitely action should be there, not just talk. And we could throw in little discreet, almost invisible such gimmicks here and there, just to spice it a little. I mean, salt and pepper are still used. Same spices are used for all meals. I mean, to make a multitude of meals, so we could see them like that. I'm just saying this as a reminder to myself. And these characters, like, I thought about this tree there. So she came up with that, a tree standing outside of the Hogwarts castle. And I don't know why, what's the story? It was involved more, so maybe the story was revealed later. But it's interesting, just having a tree, for instance, standing there. It's been standing there for 1,000 years or something. And if we're not talking Boulevard, where I think we could move things to when we want to get a little bit more fantastic. Yes, that's a good thing to learn from the Harry Potter story. Now I nailed it, because that's what I thought all along. After I saw the film again. Is that they don't, of course, this fantasy style in general, when we want to get into these fantastic scenes and characters that we just don't find in this world, that are not limited within the confines of what's possible or not in this world, and we can go wild, you know, really, it opens up a completely new scope of possibilities for storytelling, right? So, therefore, I think that more and more can happen in Boulevard, because so far I just thought it's a little, I just thought of it in a little sketchy and fragmental, but hey, it's a whole world to be explored here. And a whole world of characters. Now, we could take it even further. We could bring in the 20 and Twinas book, where much of the action is going on. It's really pretty much like this, what we're talking about here. Ontologically, it's a word, I don't know. Cosmologically, yeah. So we have who's living out there in Boulevard? We have, of course, the ancestors, parents, grandparents, so on, family members of people in there in world, in Earth, in the shadow land. And they are, of course, happy that they got out of there. And they look in there and see their children being in danger in there, because that's really what is going on. It's getting very dangerous. Humans, as they call themselves, the Earthlings in there, are really preparing themselves to well, they are really messing things up for themselves and each other. And the sandbox, it's about to get to break out to a real good brawl. Now, that in itself is not of the major concern for those here in Buvaloka. This is just the sandbox anyway. But they care for their loved ones who are just sleeping in there, who are just stuck in there in their minds, because they think it's all real. although it's really a, as we started talking about it, it's a kind of ride, an amusement park, an adventure. But, you know, an adventure which takes things a bit to the extreme, and because that has to be included, right? Whatever we can dream up, eventually appears if we desire it. So it's very complicated and hard to understand for us how these worlds appear and why, but that's something along that line. So, but in any case, whether in a game or not, if a person is suffering, even if it's just in the mind and the dream, we care for that person. Maybe wake him up. Hey, you're having a nightmare. You see the little child there in the bed, tossing and turning and crying. So this should be a bit the way things are seen from the Borloka. And yes, those there, they can appear in dreams. Because that's when the person in there, the soul in there, and thinking themselves to be in there in this earthly world and that body, they kind of flow out of it for a little while, and then you can connect. They are kind of on that Bovarloka level. And yes, our Pio has experiences like that when he's dreaming, and all of a sudden in that dream someone comes up to him and says, hey, I'm not part of the dream. I come here to show you something. And then just giving him an instruction, look around it, around the corner here. And he kind of leads him. And so there's the dream like a bubble, but if you go out the bubble, you can go around, and then you are in a world of that same nature, but not just a little bubble in your own mind, but a real world, and that's Bovarloka. So we can go and play with these kind of things. This, what I just described, is actually a dream I had. The guy writing this. So, and really, much of what you will find here in this fantastic Bovard world is based on either such on experience and dreams and so on, of the author, but also of others, and of accounts from ancient, you know, deep wisdom scriptures written by sadhus, yogis, gurus, shamans, those people who in the days of yore, before even religions existed, possess this ability, knew this art of, as we still hear about them today, of traveling between the worlds. And thus they were the guides they could communicate as messengers, guidance from higher worlds. They could go down to lower worlds if necessary to negotiate, deal out. Make peace. They were like ambassadors or diplomats of the bigger cosmos or of Earth and the bigger cosmos. So we can make a whole thing out of that. So there are all these different ways that the Boovar people can connect to the Earthlings, the Earth people, the Boo people. We can call it Boovar and Boo actually, so we're connected to the cosmology there. Little, how do you call it? Hints for the bhaktas. Oh, the Vedic cosmologists. So yeah. And the characters I thought about them, this tree there, for instance. You can invent any characters that some or other make sense or naturally appear in the story, and then just get into it like that. Let's say you have a tree like that. You can tell the backstory of that tree. Why did that soul end up standing there as a tree? In that specific place. Maybe dark place, maybe bright place, but then we can follow that person, previous lives, and our flashbacks go to previous lives, regression. We can put that whole thing there, too. Man. So in his older age, or middle age, and Pia got into hypnotherapy and started playing with regressions, experimenting. For him, it was still experimentation. He didn't consider himself a professional healer, medical person like that. That's a big responsibility. He was a scientist. He was a cosmologist. He was trying to understand how the world works. So, I mean, we can put that right in the story here, because that's, yeah, but just make it a little Potterish, right? So then, and that's why the Boovar realm is so good to have. Not as a little background thing, as a first thought, but in the first book, well, in all the books, I think, maybe, at least 50%. If not more, I don't know. But the point here would be also to accept this. I mean, anyway, just that's what I guess general movie and novel character development is about. So just follow that with proper understanding of why you can benefit as an author very much from developing characters so deeply. For instance, you have the tree, a tree that is angry. I'm just picking up there from Harry Potter. And you have kids there around it, and they're afraid of it, and they also tell stories about it, and there is a mystique, a mythology, and all kinds of things around that tree. As you sometimes have it in small towns, for instance, like the cannonball in the tree down by the shore of a lake where I grew up, and we used to go there with our bicycles and look at it. I can put that also in the POL from that war out there on the ice where the Swedish king was killed and the Danish king took power of Sweden. I mean, actually, when you think about it, it's a pretty spectacular scene there, right? And it's for real. It's history. And this guy speaking this, he used to go there with his bicycle and his friend, looking at us, that cannonball and that oak tree. Maybe like 7 centimeters diameter or something. I actually dug into the bark of that tree. It hit so hard, it got stuck, and it stayed there for 500 years or something. Now, it's not there anymore, of course. Some person dug it out, but why no one did that before? I mean, this whole story about that tree or whatever. Yeah, we could tell that story too. But then, yes, the characters that there could be, that's why I thought of the Människoöden, that what happens in Bovar is also connected to what happens in Bo. In other words, Bo is like a stage. Where you enter, and there you are, in a certain role, with a certain conditioning, a certain mental and physical framework, finding yourself in a certain role. And when you look at it from the outside, you think, why are they behaving so funny? As if the game was for real. It's just a game. But then someone feels that urge to, yeah, I would like to be that kind of character. I have this dream, actually, of doing that thing. And I'm looking in there at those and, wow. It would be fun, but I also just, there's something I have to go through, I feel here, to learn something more. Because, you know, they're there in Bovar, they're also not in Cow Island, they're also not, you know, they are on this, in the dream worlds. So So they are susceptible. They are here in the dream world's area, which is like a big, you could say, landscape, beautiful, fantastic park-like place. That's where, that's, you know, like, think of this Orlando theme park area. But we make it in a more fantastic level, in a Bouvard level, which could really be something, right? And one of them, as in a little, this island there, you have the Earth. And you have, you know, the ghost train and this and that. It's really like a theme park from that side. But those who walk around there, they choose rides. And why they choose? Well, of course, that's why they're here. Karnam, they have desires there. They came here with a cause, something they wanted to experience. So a desire was born there, and this put them in this, you know, let's go to the dream world, dreamland. And here they are, just like someone wants to have fun and goes to Disney World. They have a desire, right? Otherwise, why would they go? And then when you're there, oh, this would be fun, that would be fun. There are all these dreams available, and they can make up those dreams themselves too. And then they enter those dreams. Jump on that ride. So what's going on in there, in the Earth ride? It's also, of course, being discussed among them here in Bouvard. It's us, you know, we go in there. But now others came in there from the lower. So there's this kind of well, you could see it as a combat or conflict going on between the gods and the demons, the devas and the asuras, as we find it in the Vedic cosmology. But it's really about, you know, the seven higher and seven lower realms. You know, here we have the lokas, right? And Bur is one of them. That's Earth, the shadow world land, right? So we put it in this cosmology, it fits perfectly. And that's the point of it, really, deeper. So then they see, you know, there are others going, coming up from those places, you know. And sometimes this earthly shadow land around the mid between is considered as part of the lower planetary system. It's there in the Bhagavatam, I think, when Shukadev starts explaining to Parikshit there after being questioned by him when he mentions the Virat. Check that out again. Anyway, we can use this somehow or other. To build up the worlds that all this is taking place in the story. Just like Tolkien did with these different places and the map and everything. And Rowling too. That's good. Really telling the backstories, which can maybe be used in the stories. It's not a waste of time of each character. And also make basically a map or maps. Whether they are then used or not, that's another thing. But for the author, very useful. Because it should get real here. And it is real here, and that's the real interesting thing. So yeah, I think we pretty much have it here, don't we? Now, I originally thought that Aina would come. Well, it's a little bit C.S. Lewis. Thing there I wanted to put in as an homage to him from the when they are sailing on that ocean close to the end of the world and they find something down there, I don't remember, but where she dives down and there's a world down there and where she drops down into that world and what was water for her, a rather gross substance, is here their atmosphere, their air. I think at least that's beautiful. So she may come that way. But then when she is there, then she can see this kind of meru formation, which is like a mountain. Why not a mountain, right? And up there, you have villages along that the side of that mountain, and little house of buildings with lights on, and if there's a need for that. Yeah, a little bit. It doesn't get completely black up here, but it gets a little shadowy now and then, and everyone gets peaceful and rests, meditates. And dreams, of course. When they dream, I don't know, maybe they could then appear in the earth realm, just as the earth, those here, can appear in the Buvar realm. The Buvar people can appear in the Bu realm in their dreams. That's a cool thing. So you see that mountain going up. But then as you look up into the sky, you could, I don't know if you can illustrate that like that, is more of a, experimental thought here, that this sky, however that will look, that is there in Búvár, which will look very alive, very nice, not just flat, bluish, grayish, whatever it is here, but more shining in itself, and the sun is there, maybe bigger, again more shining, personal, loving. I don't know if we should put a mouth and eyes on the sun, but something almost towards that here is, the sun is alive and can speak to you, not with because, you know, here they speak in the mind. You don't need it's just, you know, physical, you know, they're not physical, so we have to figure that one out. How speech is going on, but you know, I had the experience, and others wrote about it, that people and outside of this physical, they can communicate just by thoughts. It makes perfect sense too, doesn't it? It's much quicker. So whatever. If they move their mouth sometimes or at all or nothing, I don't know. I guess it could be voluntary. When you sing, for instance, you will probably use your mouth because you're making some beautiful creation for everyone to hear. But for just ordinary communication, you don't need that. So the sun, same way, if you turn to the sun and connect in that way, in a nice, humble mood, and you are qualified to do that. I mean, just as you are qualified, you must be qualified to contact any big, important ruler on earth. You get a dialogue. Otherwise, you're just there, and you have the sun there. Of course, you love the sun, it's like a father. So we build it up like that, and everything I'm saying now is also coming from old Shastra scriptures and people like Swedenborg and others. So yeah, but the mountain then, sometimes, you know, the sun here is never too sharp and like hot, but always pleasant. That's one difference. And when you're in the shadow, I mean, it's there too. But it's a different kind of shadow. It's just like we see here, not always are shadows, you know, negative as if shadowed mind or something, but they are just, you know, when you are in the shadow, sitting in the shadow there, you rest. Just as you rest in the night here. And it may even get night there, but there are plenty of stars, and it's not that kind of scary black, but it's a beautiful, maybe dark bluish or so. So we can paint and build this whole landscape. And along that side of that mountain, you find there a path or several of little mountain roads like that. Again, not along a scary stoop, what do you call it, steep. I used to sometimes see, you know, in India, these buses travel, you're just scared all the time. But here it's these roads or paths are wider. And they're not very steep either. They kind of go, you know, you have time, you have a nice walk there with your friends and so on. Or you travel in some vehicle. There are animals, of course, and pretty much as on Earth, but it's all of a, you could say, fantasy-like nature, aesthetically. Again, much like Tolkien's or whoever, I mean, Rowling's environments are, and characters and vegetation and all of that. But we could work even more on it, the vegetation and so on, not to make it look weird as it sometimes does in Avatar, but you know, they did it pretty well, actually. But it doesn't have to be a jungle landscape. Oh, I should look at it again, actually. So anyway, I mean, work it out well. Either literally, or movie script-ishly. Because I'm thinking, kind of tend to think both at once here. And I think it's good to think both at once because then you're visualizing more as you make up a story, and when you write, probably that would help bringing the story to life. Anyway, yeah. And those paths or roads there, they lead to little villages, sometimes just a house or two families living there, a little outside the village, much like village life used to be in the glorious days on this planet, Mediterranean or something, you know, that kind of style. Again, fantasy enhanced. And one path and one journey is that you go through all of these. And that path then that you are walking on is the path of love. But you may not know it, or you may. And it's that path that then continues down and out over that bridge to be available also in the earthly realm, because it goes, well, I think we should put it like this, that the earthly realm, the boor, I mean, it seems I can find it justified in the Bhagavatam. But little stretch of imagination here, okay? It's a story after all. That the earthly realm is the one that this path of love goes to over that bridge. And that's the shadow land, which is actually supposed to be fun land, you know. That's where you could say it's yeah, that's why it's called Shadowland, because it can be real fun. And it's really actually where you play out those ideas that you have. And if you go upwards on this mountain there, you will come to the residence of great sages and fantastic worlds up there that are just so elevated. And the higher you get, it's just you get wiser, and you have to get wiser, otherwise you can't even enter there. And we can make that whole path there really nice. I mean, just an idea that we could really make this a long story by having then okay, P, I make another recording.